Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Man. What a crazy turn of events we have seen in the NFL of late with Drew Brees, who has gone from pariah to now taking on Donald Trump over the national anthem. And if you are Roger Goodell and you are sitting around right now and you are thinking to yourself, man, we handled the coronavirus perfectly in the NFL. It has had almost no impact on our business by and large so far. We kept up with NFL free agency, which was wildly popular. We also managed to do the NFL draft, which blew the ratings out of the water for any other event that has ever occurred. We were rolling towards a massive television rights increase deal that we are currently working on. And then, boom, all of a sudden, we have a national anthem controversy brewing itself brand new again after Drew Brees makes comments, his teammates and other people in the world of the NFL get upset. It sets off an absolute firestorm. Donald Trump tweets about it. Drew Brees tweets back at Donald Trump. It is now a, I would say, if it's not a conflagration, which is, you know, massive fire, it's at least a fire. And the question is, how much is it going to spread? And rather than get into the anthem debate, which there's going to be lots of time to get into, and we've gotten into the anthem debate before, I want to think about this more like a business owner. One of the things that I tell you guys to do if you want to be successful is think like an owner, not like an employee. And what I mean by that is employees are often thinking about that next paycheck. They're not thinking years into advance. They're not thinking about why they get the paycheck. They're just going through the process of being an employee as opposed to thinking like an owner. And as somebody who owns a business but has also been an employee for much of my life, I feel like I have a foot pretty squarely in each side. I can understand the employee way of thinking. I can understand the owner way of thinking. And let me just tell you, the owner way of thinking is much more productive to personal advancement because it's about thinking on a broader scale, on a larger universe than an employee is. So I want us to think about this situation as if we were Roger Goodell, or as if we were an NFL owner, or as if we were an executive at the TV networks. Let's think about this not as a cultural issue, because it certainly is a cultural issue. And there are lots of people who are going to talk about the national anthem today as a cultural issue. What is the impact of the anthem? What does it mean? All of those things, right? That is a cultural issue. I want to talk about it entirely this morning to start off the show here as a business-related issue. And in particular, there are several different stakeholders, all with investments in this issue, that impact the way that it's going to play out going forward. And I sketched out, getting ready for the show, six different stakeholders, all of whom have different goals in mind, and all of whom have to come together in some way and agree on a potential compromise that may not make any of them happy. And so I'll get you to my compromise, but first, let's keep this in mind. All of the stakeholders here in the NFL have different goals, and I'm going to run through these. But before we do, an important detail. NFL ratings dropped 19% during the Colin Kaepernick protest and controversy. Let me repeat that. NFL ratings dropped 19% during the Colin Kaepernick protest, costing television partners hundreds of millions of dollars in lost ratings points that they were never able to recoup. Over the last 2 years, as the Colin Kaepernick story disappeared, the NFL's ratings came back up in a good way, But in the 2 years involving the Colin Kaepernick protest, the year that he protested and the year after the protest, when he was still much a part of the conversation, NFL ratings declined 19%. If you are a business owner and your business's value, the eyeballs on it, the number of consumers who are consuming your product, dropped 19%, that is a cataclysmic decline. All right? So this has never happened before in the history of the NFL for them to have that precipitous of a ratings decline. And since it's gone away, the Kaepernick controversy, the ratings have come back up. I don't know very many people who don't, to a large degree, attribute that ratings decline to Colin Kaepernick and the fallout from it. Okay? So the NFL is in a tough position. People say, well, you talk about controversial things all the time. Yeah. But my job isn't to appeal to 100% of the public. If my job was to appeal to 100% of the public, I would never, ever say anything remotely controversial. If I were an athlete, I would want to appeal to everyone. And I think, honestly, that's what Drew Brees is. So we're going to get to Drew Brees in a sec. But that's my perspective. But I don't have to appeal to everyone. I only have to appeal to a certain segment of the radio, sports radio listening audience, and we can dominate, right? We dominate right now and are growing faster than any sports talk radio show in the country. And the reason why we are doing that is because we are growing our audience of people that particularly choose to come spend time with us. But the NFL doesn't have that luxury where they can say, hey, let's just worry about the people who really love our product. They've got to worry about everybody. When 100 million people watch the Super Bowl, that's basically the entirety of America. More people watch the Super Bowl than watch the highest rated game of the NBA Finals, the highest rated game of the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, the highest rated game in college football, which is usually the national title game, and the highest rated game of the World Series. All four of those combined don't have the same audience as the Super Bowl. So the NFL is in a different stratosphere than every other popular sport in America, okay? So here are the stakeholders. First, literal stakeholders are the 32 NFL owners. If you own an NFL franchise, what are you primarily motivated by? Money and wins. They want to make as much money as they can, and they want to win as many games as they can. NFL owners are not really that difficult to understand. For the most part, if you show them ways to make more money, they are going to be in favor of making more money. Roger Goodell directly works for the NFL owners. All 32 of them, by and large, are about making more money. And right now, they're in the middle of their television negotiations, which is why I think Roger Goodell came out on Friday night and tried to douse down this controversy with his statement, because he doesn't want the television networks getting nervous and saying, wait, are we going back to the future again? Are you going to cause us to lose hundreds of millions of dollars because of protests involving your game? So the first stakeholder here to think about is the NFL owners. What do they want? More money. Almost always the answer is more money. That's the great thing about capitalism. Ultimately, whether you are Jay-Z or whether you are Justin Timberlake or whether you're an NFL owner, if you are a capitalist in the entertainment industry, it almost always comes down to money. What's the second stakeholder? The TV networks. What do they want? They want money too. How do they get money? This is a little bit different. Via ratings. Okay, they want peace and just football. They know that you guys like football. If they can just deliver you entertaining football, their ratings are going to be fantastic. People are going to tune in and they are going to make money. If they start serving football with a side of politics, then they know, based on a couple of years ago, their audiences decline precipitously. And as a result, fewer people watch. Number one stakeholder, owners. Number two stakeholder, TV networks. How about the number three stakeholder here? The president of the United States. He has used the NFL as an opportunity to grow, he believes, his audience and depth of support. His crowd wants players to stand for the national anthem. What is Donald Trump's goal? Re-election. What's different is Donald Trump doesn't need everybody to like him. He just needs an electoral vote majority. So unlike the NFL owners and unlike the TV networks, Donald Trump doesn't care about everybody liking him. He only needs one more electoral vote than necessary in order to be the president of the United States. And he believes fighting with the NFL burnishes his overall brand. How about another stakeholder? Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL. What does he want? He wants peace and he wants money. How does he get both? That's his challenge. He's got to keep the players from being angry enough that it hurts the television network negotiations so that money is maximized. He's the conduit in many ways, even though he represents the owners, between the owners and the players. Let's go to the players. Let's start with Drew Brees, who set off this entire controversy. What does Drew Brees want? I think it's pretty clear what Drew Brees wants. He wants everybody to like him. And he was blown away by the response to his comments, so he walked those back, and then he changed his comments again and went after Donald Trump. Drew Brees is desperate to be liked, and probably desperate to be liked by his teammates even more than he's desperate to be liked by anyone else. What Drew Brees wants is for everything to just be focused on him being a good guy. And he is a good guy, by and large. $5 million donation, incredibly important to the reason why the Saints are still in New Orleans. A guy who prior to this past week had really not ever, in my experience, I don't know that anybody had ever even said a bad word about him. He was unprepared for all of the blowback, and he wants things to go back to normal where he's incredibly beloved. That explains his actions. Finally, the NFL players in general, what do they want? This is more complicated because the NFL players themselves don't all have the same goal. They've got players with social justice aims. They've got players who want to be heard on their political opinions. There's also, however, a lot of other players who just want to make as much money as possible. How do we know that? Because we recently had a vote for the NFL Players Association to ratify a new CBA, a new collective bargaining agreement, and many players voted in favor of it, even though it required more work, which would theoretically be more danger to their bodies, because they were willing to do that to make more money. So the players, while many outspoken players are involved in the process of speaking out politically on whatever they believe in, there are also a lot of players who would just say, man, I don't care. I just want to make more money. And remember, we've got a revenue share agreement that now goes on between the NFL owners and the NFL players. So they are directly connected through these television rights negotiations. The more money the owners make, the more money the players make. They are really business partners here in the middle of TV negotiations. Okay, I just laid all of that out. The stakeholders, NFL owners, TV networks, the president of the United States, Donald Trump, Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, Drew Brees, the player who has found himself at the center of this battle, and then the overall larger NFL player universe. What do you do to fix this? Let's think like an owner, not like an employee. You've got all these different stakeholders, all with different goals in mind. How do you get this resolved in a way that doesn't fundamentally damage the NFL brand like it happened when ratings plummeted 19% just a couple of years ago. I don't know that there is 100% of an easy solution here, but I have got an idea that I am going to share with you in the next segment for what I think could be a solution that would be a little bit of a risky solution because it would probably get criticized initially, but I've got an idea for you, and I'm going to tell you what it is next. I'm also curious in what your ideas would be. And by the way, a lot of you are going to be like, oh, my idea is do 100% what one of these people wants, right? Because a lot of you don't think like owners, you think like employees. And employees oftentimes are not very good at compromise, right? So a lot of you are going to say, well, everybody, all the players should just kneel, or all the players should just stand, or the NFL ought to tell all the players, you don't get a paycheck if you don't stand up. All of those things theoretically create a larger rift in the NFL brand. This needs to be solved at some point in the next 6 weeks before players get back to training camp and before that first preseason game and that first season game happens. I'm going to talk about it with you next.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
All right, if you're just hanging out with us, at the open of the hour, I talked about a bunch of different stakeholders being involved in the NFL controversy that has reemerged over the past several days surrounding the anthem. And I'm not interested in having a debate about the anthem because we did that 4 years ago, 3 years ago, all that time. There's been a lot of discussion about it. What I'm interested in is thinking about this like an owner instead of an employee and thinking about it from the perspective of all the stakeholders. NFL owners, TV networks, President Donald Trump, Roger Goodell, Drew Brees, and additional players, what do they all want? Okay, so if I am trying to solve this issue, what I am trying to do right now is put out the fire and get as big of a television contract as I possibly can. This year in the NFL, we're not sure exactly what crowds will look like in different parts of the country. It may be the case that in Texas, almost full stadiums exist, and it could be in California that almost no one is allowed to go to games. That could happen. We don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but we know that everybody is going to be hypersensitive to the coronavirus. So if I'm sitting around and I'm trying to think about how to avoid an anthem controversy and just play football for this season, tell me what you think about this idea. If we said the only people that are allowed to be on the football field are people directly connected to the necessity of the game, both from playing, officiating, and televising. Otherwise, there are no people there because we want to try to keep the players from unnecessary risk of infection. Why couldn't you eliminate cheerleaders and all pre-halftime and post-game festivities, as well as the introduction of players, all of that? I'm already thinking about this a little bit, for instance, in the NBA, because we know the NBA is not going to have crowds present in their gyms. Is it going to make sense to do a 1990 Bulls introduction for players in an empty gym, or will it just look silly to announce all of the players and have them jog out and shake hands when there's not actually anybody in the crowd? I think it will look a little bit ridiculous. Similarly, in the NFL, I don't know that you want to bring in anybody to sing the national anthem and be on the field. I don't know that you want cheerleaders on the field this year because they are ancillary products of the NFL game that aren't necessary. I don't know that you want halftime contests when you're requiring guys to come out onto the field. I don't know that you want to be presenting game balls to anybody or having anybody who is unnecessary on the field of play at all. So why couldn't you eliminate all pregame festivities, including the national anthem, for this year during the coronavirus, argue that you're doing it, which is a decent argument, to allow the players to be protected from additional and unnecessary exposure. Because the good thing about NFL stadiums is even if there are fans, there's typically a pretty big gap between where the fans would sit in an NFL stadium and where the players are. It's unlikely that a player or a fan would come within 6 feet of each other unless a player decides to do it, right? If you did a Lambeau leap, for instance, which may not be a thing with the coronavirus going on, you're choosing to be in close contact with a fan. But otherwise, thanks to the way that the NFL is benefited by the design of the stadiums, you would theoretically be able to avoid having fans in close proximity to players. Now, what would the reaction be to this idea? So in that universe, you would eliminate any of the controversy surrounding what happens during the national anthem. You could potentially play the national anthem on the jumbotrons for the fans that are in attendance before the players come out onto the field. And maybe you could also make and include a social justice video that you play as part of the introduction before the actual players run onto the field. But by the time the players run onto the field, there's nothing going on except the coin flip and the start of the game. Does that make sense to a lot of you out there? I think it kind of does. And you can argue that there is a health reason for why it's occurring. Because if you really want to get aggressive, you can even point to studies that show when people sing that they expectorate. In other words, they are spitting, their breath moves further than it otherwise would and could put people in danger who are there standing alongside for the national anthem. It's an idea. Now, what would the reaction be? What would the reaction be from NFL owners? If it makes them more money and helps protect their money, I don't think they would care. What about TV networks? Do you notice what happened? One reason the ratings started going back up? TV networks stopped covering the protest. They stopped arriving and putting their cameras on players who were protesting during the anthem and instead simply decided to pretend that it wasn't occurring. And as a result, a lot of people stop paying attention. The president might complain, but it puts him in a tough spot if he complains and the reason the NFL is citing for why they have changed the protocols this year is the coronavirus, because there are a lot of changes that are going on because of the coronavirus. Roger Goodell, again, it's a bit of a messy compromise, but it's potentially a compromise that works pretty well. Drew Brees and players like him who don't want to end up in the center of controversy forever and want everybody to like them would probably be comfortable with this solution. Players who want to make a statement still have the right to make statements, and the NFL has endorsed their right to make the statements, but they do it in ways other than during the anthem. And for all the players out there who don't really care about anything other than making money, they have that right to make as much money as they possibly can. This, to me, seems like it may be a solution that makes an absolute ton of sense going forward. I'm going to talk with a couple of guests about this during the course of the program, and I think that a lot of you out there would also think about this and say, you know what? Maybe this starts to make a little bit of sense. It doesn't make everybody happy, but it could avoid the NFL having their ratings drop 19% again, and it postpones any kind of resolution for another year when you would hope things are a lot calmer and you can then figure out what makes sense going forward. Because remember, prior to 2009, NFL players were not on the field for the national anthem. This was something that was changed as a way to theoretically make the league look more patriotic. A lot of colleges, for instance, and there are a lot of college kids coming back to campus right now, a lot of colleges don't require their players to be on the field at all. So if you've wondered why we haven't seen anthem controversies in, for instance, college football, it's because the SEC, for instance, has never had its players out on the field for the national anthem. They don't bring them out until after the anthem. So in many parts of college football, every conference has a different rule. The SEC is the biggest conference in all of college football. They have avoided this controversy by simply having a rule in place that their players never came out for the national anthem, because there's so much pomp and circumstance otherwise involving teams and coaches and players running onto the field, which is arguably a much greater moment of pageantry in college football than it is the NFL. The introduction of the team and the way they enter the field in college football is a much more exciting way, I think, than the way the NFL does it. But that's a debate into the future. This is an idea that I think makes a lot of sense. Call it the Travis Compromise. I'll bring in the crew and see what they think about this in a little bit. We got a loaded show for you. I appreciate all of you hanging out with me. This is Outkick the Coverage. Am I a genius or am I insane? Have I solved an intractable problem for the NFL? We'll bring in the crew, get their opinions on it.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
We are joined now by my guy, Todd Furman. You can watch him on Lock It In generally with me, although we've been on a hiatus because there haven't been a lot of sporting events going on. We have been doing videos, which you can see on social if you follow me on Twitter at Clay Travis or Todd Furman at Todd Furman on Twitter. We're here in the Geico Outkick Studios where you can get your free credit scorecard today. Even if you're not a Discover customer, to include your FICO credit score and checking your scorecard won't hurt your credit. Learn more at discover.com/credit scorecard. Limitations apply. No limitations apply, however, to this program. We bring in, like I said, Todd Furman now. Furman, what do you think about my idea of just eliminating all extraneous personnel from the field as a way to try to avoid the NFL getting drawn into politics in an election year? I guess the positive is we now feel confident the NFL is going to be playing. The negative is people are going to be even more politically charged than normal. And the idea of the NFL alienating 50% of its audience, no matter what it does, doesn't seem like good business.
You know, we saw 4 years ago how politicized it was back in the election year 2016. We're headed down a similar path right now in 2020. And I think if you talk about an environment where there are going to be no fans, you can eliminate a lot of that pageantry that typically comes with the pregame festivities. Maybe it's the TV partners cutting in right to kickoff instead of some of the other elements. But I definitely think you want to try and eliminate some of that controversy, if at all possible. We'll see how all of this plays out over the next couple months before we start talking regular season NFL football.
All right, let's talk about how you bet in football games when the crowd situation is uncertain. I want to give you a hypothetical. Dallas Cowboys are in the state of Dallas. A lot of people who live in Dallas do feel like if they're Cowboy fans, they live in the state of Dallas. In the state of Texas, where you can already have 50% fans, theoretically. They play against the Redskins, the Giants, and the Eagles in a much harder hit region of the country on the East Coast where it's possible there aren't fans present. How would you handicap, for instance, the NFC East race if the Dallas Cowboys are able to have fans and the other three teams aren't?
Well, what it does, when you look at the overall body of work, whether it's win total, division odds, or futures, anything along those lines, it's going to significantly change the win probability you attach to some of these games being played in their home venue. Now, the Cowboys typically don't have a great home field advantage. We know they have an outstanding stadium. But it's not like going into New Orleans for a Sunday or Monday night football game where you know that crowd can be electric, or Seattle in prime time, or even Green Bay late in the season when you know you have the elements working in your favor. But it definitely gives the Cowboys a couple percentage points in each of their home games compared to the Redskins, Eagles, and Giants that could be playing without their fans in attendance. But I think it begs a bigger question from the NFL, and I know you talked about earlier in the show, some of the politically charged environments. If you're going to allow some fans to come into venues based on states and cities that weren't hit as hard by the pandemic earlier. I think that creates a whole Pandora's box from a political side, more so than anything else, because you're going to have a lot of fans clamoring against local government, going, how come our opponents can have fans, but we're not able to? So I wouldn't be surprised, and you know, I'm speaking out of turn here because I don't know how the league will handle it, that the league went, you know what, if all 32 teams can't have fans, then no teams can have fans in 2020.
Yeah, and that could turn into a huge legal battle too, because if I'm Jerry Jones and I've got this huge stadium that I have a mortgage to pay on, and my governor is telling me, hey, you can have 50% or more of your fans present, and the NFL's telling me I'm not, I can't. You know what I do? I file a lawsuit. And I try to get a court to rule that that my governor has the right to make a decision, and the NFL can't supersede that ruling. And it's a fascinating legal question to even think about. I'm not sure exactly what would happen, but as a business owner, if I'm Jerry Jones, I go straight to the courthouse if that prohibition happens. And the other one that immediately comes to mind, by the way, Furman, you think about large geographic expanses. We've got the same thing in the AFC East, where it feels like we had Ron DeSantis on this program a couple of weeks ago, and he said, yo, yeah, fans are going to be present for our games. So you look at a situation where the Miami Dolphins could have fans, and you might not be able to have fans in New England with the Jets or with the Bills. Again, we're kind of sketching towards the future, but that would be a substantial difference in the way that that those teams would have home field advantages.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And I think the league could find themselves back in a corner for a lot of the reasons that you outlined there. If you allow one team to do it, how exactly will it play out? I know Melvin Gordon a few weeks ago joked, hey, it's not a big deal for me as a former member of the Chargers because we played home games and it felt like we were on the road for all 16 weeks. But there's no doubt about it that when you talk about home field advantage, and it's unfair to use a true baseline that's more in that 2.5, 2.75 point range, and you're going to want to adjust based on every individual unique situation. For a team like Jacksonville that has no home field advantage other than when the heat and humidity work for teams coming down there from the north, that it will change the way that you need to try and handicap not only week to week, but the entire body of work. And I think that's one of the biggest questions that handicappers have now, because when you look at a lot of the week one lines that are available on FoxBet, for me, that has home field advantage built into both side totals and money lines. Whereas you're going to see over-unders that are going to change as well, because if the offense on the road has a better ability to communicate, they're going to have chances to be able to score. We've seen teams going up to Seattle and how many times they'll jump offside, the extra penalties. And so far, albeit a very small sample size in the Bundesliga, you've seen road teams fare a lot better without fans in the building than they did for the first 25 match days when they went in a traditional environment.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And another one, by the way, in the NFL is Arizona looks like it's going to be pretty wide open compared to Seattle, the 49ers, and the Rams in the NFC West, which is a highly competitive division. The Cardinals could theoretically have a home field advantage. Again, what you look for is geographic differences where some states are more wide open than others. Other places, it may not matter at all. For instance, the NFC South and the AFC South, it doesn't seem like there's going to be very much difference in the way those divisions would be treated. And probably not that much difference in the NFC North. But where you've got a more substantial geographic range, this pandemic hit in different ways in different places, and every state has been making decisions that could be different than some of its neighbors. All right, let's go into another situation without precedent. The NBA without fans is going to finish its season in Disney World. From a gambling perspective, we know that depending on where you look, the Bucks and the Lakers appear to be the most likely teams to advance from the East and the West to get there. How do you handicap from a gambling perspective what a 7-game series potentially looks like with no fans and no home court advantage?
You know, honestly, when you look at some of the numbers, it's going to come off of a pure power profile more so than anything else. And typically what you see over the course of a 7-game series in the NBA is game one is a true indication. A team that loses, especially if it's the home team, they come out as heavier favorites in game two. And then if a team, though, faces an 0-2 deficit when they go home for game three, that's oftentimes the shortest number that the underdog is going to have working in their favor. You now have none of those elements that you can truly factor in. So I think the number from an against the spread standpoint and a total is going to remain largely unchanged, but you could see over-unders take wild fluctuations if a game comes in 15 to 20 points under. We're not sure exactly what the shooting backdrops are going to look like or how quickly the players will adjust. But when you look at the future pool that you alluded to, I think there's some other elements that you rarely have to factor in such as, you know, the mental capacity, and for will the younger teams benefit if they don't have large families that they may not be able to bring into the bubble with them? You know, you talk about some of the guys that aren't able to lock in for 2.5 to 3 months. I think that's something that could lend itself quite nicely to veterans. You know, we have a much shorter window. We don't need some of those external distractions. And do you need a deeper roster if the NBA playoff schedule has some of these teams playing, you know, 2 games in back-to-back nights, or maybe 3 games in 5 nights, whereas we've grown accustomed to you play 1 game on a Sunday in the NBA and you may not play again until Thursday under the normal playoff format to maximize some of those TV eyeballs.
What about, you know, the impact? It's kind of fascinating. I don't know that we've ever seen any precedent. You mentioned the Bundesliga and trying to look over at Europe where they're playing without fans. One of the big parts has been officiating, and a lot of the home court advantage sometimes when you look at the numbers comes down to how officials call games, and they claim that they don't actually change anything, but the data reflects that they do get impacted by the home crowd. That theoretically makes these more of an equitable contest to figure out who the best teams are, right?
Exactly. And you mentioned the Bundesliga. We've seen the cards issued to away teams have declined with no fans in attendance, because you don't have to kind of pander, maybe that's not the right adjective to use, to that home crowd and try and appease them when you have that fervent atmosphere. The crowds have worked themselves into a lather. So you would think that there's still going to be star treatment. And I know the NBA for a little while kicked around a number of ideas to try and help with that home court. Things as straightforward as, all right, the higher seeded team gets the ball to start every single quarter, the potential that one player could be designated to pick up 7 fouls. I don't think we want to see an asterisk by anything that happens, although these are unique circumstances. You have to let these games go out there and play out. And momentum, will that play a bigger role? Because when you talk about the NBA, the age-old sentiment is that it's the NBA, every team makes a run, and you only have to watch the last 2 minutes. If a team gets down, they don't have that home crowd to help them rally in a real tough position. You could see things spiral out of control pretty quickly.
Todd Furman, are you ready to get back with Lock It In and be able to gamble on daily sports again in a regular fashion? How much are you missing it?
You know what? This may sound like blasphemy, but I've almost seen this time off as a little bit of a welcome respite, and albeit not under these circumstances, because you get into such a grind where you go from one sport to another. There's definitely weekends where I'm flipping around, you know, Friday nights where I would typically be watching playoff basketball and Stanley Cup playoff action right now, or Major League Baseball, that you go, you need something back in the fold. But I think as we inch ever so close to the end of July, knowing that we're going to have NBA playoffs, you're going to have hockey, you're going to have football only a month away, both the college and pro variety, and we'll figure out exactly where Major League Baseball falls in, that it's going to be a fall unlike one that we've ever seen, with the Masters overlapping with college football, the Kentucky Derby doing the same. And I tell folks out there, make sure that you're allocating your bankroll accordingly, because there will be no shortage of sporting events to try and whet that gambling appetite.
Amen. He's Todd Furman. You can watch some of our videos we're doing digitally for Lock It In right now. I am Clay Travis. Encourage you to go download the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. Biggest month ever in May. Make June the biggest as well. Thanks for listening. Monday edition in the books. We'll be back tomorrow on Fox Sports Radio.